Hello, everyone. This is Julia Barbaro, host of the Julie and Gino podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
Hi, Julia.
Hey.
How you doing?
I am amazing.
This is going to be an amazing podcast. We got part two. We're really excited to welcome back Dr. David Hanscom to the show for part two. He's an orthopedic surgeon who retired from his practice back in 2019 to focus on teaching people how to break loose from the grip of chronic mental and physical pain and without surgery. And I want to really welcome you, Dr. Hanscom. The podcast we did on the first show was, to me, mind-blowing. And we've just been speaking off air for a few minutes. And the stuff that you've learned in the last 3 or 4 years, you're supposed to be retired. What are you doing? You're supposed to be in the golden years. You're supposed to be partying, going on these cruise ships. And I think you're probably working harder now than you did when you were working. Welcome. Well,
I talked to my wife about this. She gives me a hard time about this.
But it's our job. Okay. First of all, you too. Yeah.
Well, first of all, just to briefly summarize your last podcast. So we're going to try to skip over the first podcast. Please listen to our first podcast, understand the basics of what we're talking about today. Because until you listen to that, you won't understand a fraction of what we're going to try to say today. But the bottom line is I was in chronic pain myself for 15 years. I had 17 different physical and mental symptoms. And the worst part of my ordeal was crippling anxiety from repetitive, unpleasant thoughts, intrusive thoughts, disturbing thoughts, obsessive thoughts. And I could not escape these things. And so in 2002, I tried to commit suicide, came very close. And I have 20 medical colleagues dead from suicide. What I didn't know until just a few weeks ago is that there's a direct link in research showing a link between ruminations and suicide. And when I talk to my patients now more clearly, I knew about 10 years ago that the mental pain was a bigger problem than the physical pain. It just came really, really clear. And as a spine surgeon, that blew me away. Because here I'm talking to people about their pain. I had 4 people in 2 weeks, all males between ages 45 and 60, all very successful, had families, finances were under control, everything physically healthy. They did have surgical problems. In other words, they had a bone spur pinched in a nerve that I was planning on doing surgery on. But I looked at the questionnaire and they said 10 out of 10 on anxiety, depression, and irritability. So I looked at them and go, I could get rid of your pain surgically, get rid of your leg pain, or I could get rid of your anxiety, which one do you want to get rid of? Every one of them said, I got to get rid of my anxiety. I can't tolerate it. They can sort of live with the pain at some level, but they cannot tolerate the anxiety. So that was a huge eye-opener for me. So from that point on, I started asking people about their general circumstances, what their stress levels were. And the problem that I happened personally is I thought anxiety was psychological, right? Sounds reasonable?
Yes.
So that's why I want you to listen to the first podcast, because anxiety is just a sensation generated by your body being in fight or flight. That is it. Now, why is it so critical? Because that fight or flight response is 1 million times stronger than your conscious brain. So you have this massive survival reaction that processes about 40 million bits of information per second. Your conscious brain processes about 40. You can't treat this massive survival reaction with cognitive rational approaches. It's a complete mismatch. And it's necessary. You can't survive without anxiety. So we're trying to get rid of the word anxiety to say activated threat physiology. And when I say physiology, it's how the body functions. So you're in fight or flight. Your body's full of stress chemicals, inflammatory markers, excitatory neurochemicals, and all sorts of things are happening in your body under threat physiology. And sustained threat physiology causes symptoms, illness, and disease. The part we're talking about today is the family and kids. And there's a major problem here is that I'm going to call them ruts, repetitive unpleasant thoughts. It turns out to be a function that's universal. Some people have a little bit of them. Some people have a lot of them. I had an extreme form of them. And they're basically repetitive, intrusive, obsessive, disruptive thoughts or ruminations, whatever they are. They just torture people. And so when I almost committed suicide, it was my inability to escape from these very intense, extreme thoughts. Couldn't escape. So look at the big process. There's 3 parts of surviving for every living creature. You have your circumstances, your environment. Stress is not psychological. It's just your challenge of staying alive. And by the way, life in general is competitive. Life is not your friend. Nobody gave us a right to stay alive. We have to fight to stay alive. So you have your stresses or circumstances. then you have your brain or body or nervous system processing all this environmental input mm-hmm. from all sorts of sensors. Then your brain makes a decision, is your environment safe or is it dangerous? So when it says dangerous, we call that threat physiology, which is adrenaline, cortisol, inflammation, excitatory neurotransmitters, and you're consuming fuel. When you're in safety, you're putting fuel back into the cells, you're regenerating tissues and rebuilding. So the essence of chronic disease is chronic stress that breaks down your body. So you minimize your time in threat physiology and maximize your time in safety, people truly heal. So I had 17 different symptoms. They're all gone, including the obsessive thought patterns. Going to children, 90.2% of children under 8 years old have what we call obsessive, obsessive intrusive thoughts. This is 8 years old. And 27% of those kids, they are disruptive. So it's a problem. Most of those thought patterns are around safety. Then you have families with high A scores, which means adverse childhood events. Like we know that if you're raised in a relatively chaotic, abusive environment, that your mind spins faster, you're on high alert. So I don't know, and again, we won't go into this today, but there's data showing that the tougher your childhood, the worse the ruts. Mm-hmm. Ruts is repetitive, unpleasant thoughts.
So, Dr. David, when you're talking with children, you've got eight children, 8 years and younger, and you're saying this, they're getting all this information and being scared from school. They're being scared about the climate. They're being scared about, I mean, everything, like the things that we didn't have to deal with 30 and 40 years ago. So beware of the parents. Sometimes shut off some of the YouTube channels, get them off of a lot of the social media. I think that's one of the big precursors of what's going on with children. I mean, if you want to add and expand upon that, but that's one of the threats that I see right now. Every time, that's where when you go onto social media or any kind of media, it's all about scaring us, and you can constantly see that you're in threat. You're in chronic inflammation watching this stuff and consuming this stuff.
So that is a huge problem, and I agree with you completely that the minimizing time on social media, iPhones, et cetera, is really critical, except it's hard to do, number one. Mm-hmm. The problem is way, way deeper than that. Mm-hmm. So there's a process called mirror neurons. You know, somebody laughs, other people laugh. Somebody yawns, other people yawn. What's happening is that your yawning center is actually stimulating the yawning center of another person. It's mm-hmm. a direct stimulation of that part of the brain. So you're in a bad mood. Guess what? People around you are in a bad mood. Not psychological, you're directly stimulating that part of other people's brains. It's called mirror neuron, just how we learn, imitation. Wow. So kids are not going to be less stressed than their parents. So the number one factor that allows kids to thrive is a sense of safety. So yeah, I agree all the cell phones, et cetera, are a threat, but it's way, way deeper than that. So I'm working with a group called Peace at Home Parenting, and it's been a while working with them, but they understand this now, is that parents want to blame the kids for stressing them out, right? You've heard that?
Yes, we have.
I blame my wife for stressing me out, so I'm sure the kids probably blame me for stressing them out.
So it's the other way around.
Yeah.
So there's a little book, by the way, a little bit of a segue, but I'll bring them both up for a second. There's a little book called Feeling Good Together by David Burns. I don't have it right here. It's a thin read. His point being, if your partner or spouse pisses you off, what actually happened, you said something or did something that actually got them to react, then you reacted to that reaction. In other words, you start the ball rolling. You do it unconsciously. So what happens if you're in a bad mood, all of a sudden your partner reacts to you, you probably don't see the bad mood that you're in that started the process going. Mm-hmm. Then you get pissed off at your partner. So it's a long story, but it's called Feeling Good Together by David Byrne. It's a wonderful book, completely changed the game of my relationship. There's another little book by Anthony DeMello called The Way to Love, right here. I've given it to hundreds of people, including all my fellows, my administrators. I read it myself once or twice a week for 20 years. And he's a Jesuit priest, and it's not a religious book. He just goes into the whole idea of attachment, belief systems, stories, everything we do. But he points out, when you're angry, let's say, Gina, you see something that irritated me. Do I blame you or is it me? Mm.
Well, I know it's you. Yeah.
Right. So, but it feels like you. That's the problem. With my wife, if she does something that irritates me, I want to blame her.
Right.
But it's not her. It's me being triggered.
Mm-hmm.
So a major factor. In fact, in everybody that heals, everybody, no exceptions, they take full responsibility for mm-hmm. every aspect of their lives, especially their anger. So remember, anxiety and anger are the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So something irritates you or something you need to control, or you sense danger, you become anxious. When you solve the problem, the anxiety goes away. If you can't solve the problem, your body kicks in more stress chemicals and you become angry.
Right.
So again, this reaction is a million times stronger than your conscious brain. And so the key is you can't do anything when you're angry. Because what happens, your thinking brain just went, we call it down-regulated, but the blood supply shifts from your thinking centers down into your limbic system or the reaction centers.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you're anxious or frustrated, you've lost awareness of the situation because something in the present triggers something from the past. So you're in the past, you're not in the present anymore. Being present is the essence of human relationships. So what happens anytime you're anxious or frustrated, you just have to stop. We have a little saying, no action in a reaction, because you're not thinking right. That's why there's so much mm-hmm. domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are in their limbic brain or their survival brain, not their thinking brain. So people do, I mean, my mother was abusive. I never could figure out as a kid, she'd yell and scream, hit us, all sorts of things. Then she'd be incredibly remorseful mm-hmm. for about 2 or 3 days, and then she would cycle again. So the problem was she didn't know is she didn't know how to regulate her physiology. In other words, the answer isn't sort of solving the problem. The answer is regulating your own physiology in a way to calm down and getting your brain functioning properly again. So with kids and children, the number one thing that kids want, and in fact, what every human being wants, the number one is safety. And you're in a chaotic childhood where the parents are fighting this, and this, the kids don't feel safe. Or think about this carefully. There's a book I mentioned before called Parent Effectiveness Training. We learn to listen to your kids, be with your kids, but you don't have to raise or fix or teach your kids your wisdom because they're probably smarter than you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so the book changed my life. It's called Parent Effectiveness Training by Dr. Thomas Gordon. And I read the book at least 25 times myself. It's sort of a manual. But what it does, it takes the parent-child label off and just goes human to human. In other mm-hmm. words, how can we live together in a way that's enjoyable? And what happens is that we have this power thing going. He says, you don't have to exert your power as a parent. He says, it's like the sun versus the moon. As a parent, they're completely dependent on you. You already have the power. You don't need to exert or enforce mm-hmm. your power. It's already inherent in the relationship. So you get to learn to just live with each other. It's not about permissive parenting. He's really against that. But it's about listening, but never giving commands or orders to your children. Nobody likes to be told what to do,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, 100%.
Nobody likes unasked for advice.
Absolutely.
Well, Dr. David,
well,
I have to
hear. Well, let me, okay.
I have to have my wife read it because she likes to tell me what to do. So well, maybe so, she shouldn't tell me. Well, it's not a parent-child.
It's a parent-child. Okay, I just want everyone to hear. You just said, I love the human-to-human relationship because a lot of times as parents, we're like, well, I'm the authority and it's really a pride thing. We're like, I'm in charge. You're not. Here's what you need to do. And we traumatize our kids and we've, you know, yes, Parent Effective Training is an excellent book. And I accidentally kind of did that without reading the book. And I'm thankful to read it because I'm like, oh, good. Now I have a book to give people because I love it.
I've given this book to probably 600 people easily. And everybody has
and it's so basic, time. Right? Doctor, it's not hard to follow. It's not. And that's why I love it so much. Keep going.
So the thing is what he doesn't say in here, because they did not have the neuroscience in the 60s and 70s when he wrote this. But when you're talking, so when you're talking to your kid and they're reacting, their brains are offline. They can't rehear you.
Right.
And if you're both reacting, it's like a cosmic ping pong game of back and forth and back and forth. So the bottom line is your kids are not going to be less stressed than their parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the kids are learning their stress management skills and coping skills from their parents. So if their parents are stressed out, they're fighting, they're not having a good time, that's what gets passed on to your kids.
Yeah.
And vice versa. So then the parents are blaming their bosses mm-hmm. or their jobs or their spouse for their unhappiness. And this is a really deep statement. I'm not saying this lightly, mm-hmm. but we all know this intellectually. Your happiness is 100% your responsibility. End of story. Period. Yeah. End of story.
Love it.
So you can't blame your spouse, your kids, anybody for your unhappiness. But that's what we do as human beings. We want to blame somebody or something for our unhappiness. Mm. For instance, in the workers' comp world, 90% of people that were injured, either by the person or situation, and they don't let it go. 90% of people hold on to the anger around that situation. Mm. So how's that working for your quality of life? Mm-hmm. But remember, when you're constantly angry, your brain is literally on fire.
Yeah.
So flipping, going way ahead of the game, you don't have to exert your authority. In fact, you should not exert your authority. It's authority that's already there. You don't have to, you're only taking away from your authority. So you learn to live with your kids in a way that's enjoyable. And the number one thing is, what can I do today to play and have a good time? That's all they're looking at. Kids don't wake, his point is, kids don't wake up in the morning thinking, well, how can I piss off my parents? Believe it or not. But if they're not getting any attention or neglected, they're going to actually find it. If they have to disrupt the peace to get the attention, they will do that. Mm-hmm. So for example, again, this book changed my life. I was not mentally the right mind to be a parent. I read it when my son was about 18 months old. So after I read the book, I would come home after work, open the door, and do nothing except to sit down and play with my son for a while, for about half an hour, 45 minutes, to the point he'd get bored and sort of wander off. So he didn't have to get my attention. He just had it. Mm-hmm. And so it just sort of wiped out the need for getting attention. And so just that one little detail made a huge difference.
Yeah.
But again, going back to the original question about parents and triggers and pain, remember, anxiety is the pain. The signals mm-hmm. danger is supposed to be unpleasant. And I think we mentioned this before, and I don't think I've mentioned it yet, is that there's a research paper that I heard last week that blew my mind, is that humans do not tolerate emotional pain. They don't. There's no protective response. Like with physical pain, you automatically withdraw your hand from a hot stove because it's dangerous. With emotional pain, you don't have the protective response. Mm-hmm. So with emotional pain, we have no protection. So what we do, we suppress our thoughts or suppress the emotions, which fires up the nervous system even more. So if you experience unpleasant thoughts, it fires up your body's chemistry, it makes the pain worse. If you suppress, it's even worse. But what happens is that when you suppress mental pain, it fires up your body's physiology, or fight or flight, your nerve conduction doubles, each organ system responds in its own way. Every physical and mental symptoms is created by the stress physiology. So what happens is that the solution is actually calming down the physiology. And so the thoughts fight the physiology fires up the thoughts, but since humans don't tolerate emotional pain, what it'll do, it'll choose physical pain or create it. It will create physical pain. And the reason why they think why that happens is because emotional pain, there's no protection. With physical pain, you can, quote, see it a little bit. You have a slight amount of control over it. You can justify your suffering. You can protect yourself from expectations of others and of yourself. And with cutting, cutters actually have significant relief from their pain when they do a cutting situation. Mm-hmm. So it's the emotional pain that actually tortures people much more than the physical pain. So with your kids, it's the same thing. So kids want safety. They don't get it. Their mind starts spinning away. Mm-hmm. Again, 90% of kids 8 years old and under have these obsessive thought patterns. And so if you experience the thoughts, they're bad. If you suppress them, it's even worse. And a metaphor you can use is that if you take a hornet's nest, the hornets are doing their job, they're building a nest, they're procreating, they're storing food. They're just doing what hornets do. But what happens if you shake the nest?
They start going crazy.
Okay, then what do? You try, spraying the hornets, using fly swatter, et cetera, et cetera. So with the human brain, your brain fires off these crazy thought patterns. A lot of them are negative thoughts. So you try to counter the negative thoughts with a good thought, and it doesn't work. It's impossible. Mm-hmm. And so your brain starts spinning and spinning and spinning. So the answer to the hornet situation is quit shaking the nest. Mm. So the answer for the human brain is calm down the nervous system. So what we need to be teaching, I'm going to go to the adults for a second. There's a bunch of ways to calm yourself down. And as you calm yourself down and start having a good time in life and quit being stressed out, that allows you to actually interact with your kids in a way that's positive. And what happens when you have safe, nurturing relationships, it dramatically changes your body's chemistry to safety, which is oxytocin and dopamine and anti-inflammatory cytokines. Fuel gets put back into your cells. Your body actually truly heals. So for instance, at work, we made a decision in 2008, my partner and I, that we spend as much more time at work as than we do at home. Why not have a good time? Why put a label of work on it? So we just had the best time. We would talk to each other, get to know each other. We would joke around a little bit. We'd have to actually calm it down in clinic because it got a little bit rowdy. we had the best time. Yeah. And why not? So at home, you come home, you bring your troubles at home. You don't create a safe household. So if you don't have a safe, comfortable household to rest and regenerate, who's responsible for that? Mm. Parents. Mm-hmm. You. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I love that, Doctor, because a lot of parents, you know, me included, and every other parent that I've ever talked to is so worried, right? We take how we were raised and we're trying to either copy what our parents did or completely avoid it. And so we're always on edge. If I do too much of this, they're going to hate me. And we worry. We were like assuming the kids don't even know we're worried. And we're like, oh no, they can't read that. They don't know what they're, cause a lot of parents don't realize how intelligent children are, which always killed me because I mean, my gosh, it's ridiculous how much they pick up and obviously they're storing it. And I, you want to say something?
I'm just so anxious to share this story with you, Dr. David. It's really important to get this off my mind because in 2008, when I was working at the restaurant, I was miserable. I wasn't happy. I would come home angry. I'd come home frustrated. I'd come home, I don't say depressed. I just didn't feel like I was
depressed.
I wouldn't go that far, but I wasn't living my best life. And I knew that God created me for something more, something greater. And I felt that I needed to do something different, but I didn't know why. And now that you're saying this, I think subconsciously I knew that I was letting my family down and I wasn't creating a happy household. Mm-hmm. And that's why I doubled down. I went into real estate and ultimately I left the restaurant. And now what we do now is I get to go on podcasts and make fun of my
wife.
Can
I just tell you,
how does life get any better than that?
I actually thought you were going to say this and I want to, it was a snowstorm. So every time he had the restaurant, every time it snowed, my kids love snow, but there was a piece of them where like, dad's going to come home really mad
and
really
angry
because he lost a lot of business.
Lost business.
And so that was he had to close the restaurant, the snowstorm, he came home and I'm going to be honest, looking back, the kids were very uncomfortable when he walked in because they didn't know, they kind of knew it was going to be a negative. He walked in, he brought a pizza dough home. He put on this jacket, which made me laugh. And he started singing, "I Am the Pizza Man" to the children. And they all sat there, didn't know how to respond because they never saw him do this. He completely changed his tune into a joking, fun way. And they all got up and started dancing. They made pizza and they had the best night ever. And I think about that. Actually, for some reason, I thought you were going to tell that story.
No, not
because
that
one. The kids are afraid of when we walk in the house. When we walk in the house, they know if we're going to be miserable and yell at them or be in a good mood. And it's really sad to me to think back all the mistakes we made and they watched us walk in. And I mean, I did it today. I walked in kind of irritated. And what I'm noticing is over the years, and especially after our last podcast, Doctor, I've been paying attention to my moods. And when you are in a good place and when you're calm, literally nothing bothers you. I mean, you could be in a room of chaos and you're calm. And so I walked in a little irritated about something unrelated to them. And I actually yelled at them and they kind of were surprised because I haven't done that in a while. And they looked over and I was like, where is this coming from? And I thought, holy smokes, it was, I let those little things in like I used to. And what a difference that makes on the kids. Everyone listening, I so encourage you to get Dr. David's information and listen to our past podcast. Cause even from that last podcast, my life is completely different. And I just, first of all, I want to thank you, but encourage other parents to really look into this because it really huge impact on your family.
Well, that's what I quit my practice because of this, because it's not, as you notice, it's not very hard.
No,
and it's not about David Hanson being some genius. I'm just following the science that's already been sitting there. I don't know why medicine went down the rabbit hole of structure instead of physiology, but no, this is not very hard. It's way easier than fighting off these big survivor reactions. So I know we have a limited amount of time and there's a bunch of things we can talk about. I'd like just to settle on this one thing you talked about your impact on the home. So I'll tell you another story where I would have all sorts of stresses at work. I'd come home and talk to my wife about this. And finally, one day she said, "Stop." I go, "What do you mean?" Because I just thought home is a place you just brought your troubles and had a comforting shoulder. And she said, "They're not my problems." I go, "What do you mean? You're my wife." She goes, "They're not my problems." And she was right. It took me about 2 weeks to stop. We never talk about working at home anymore. And when I talk to parents now, I go, look, you know, your home is supposed to be a place of comfort and safety. And when you bring your troubles from work home, it's a big problem. So another story is this one wife in chronic pain had two kids ages 4 and 6, and her husband was extremely meticulous, probably OCD, and he just wanted the house perfectly picked up. So every day, about a half an hour before I came home, they start picking up the house. And the question was, it picked up well enough? And they didn't know what kind of mood he was going to be in. If it wasn't picked up well enough, he wouldn't yell at him, but just criticize this, this, and this. So instead of welcoming him home, they were afraid of him, afraid of being criticized. So I just have a website post I've written a couple times. I really emphasize this. If you're having a bad day, you know, don't bring it home, number one. But if you can't get out of the mood before you walk through the front door, don't come home for a few bits. You know, take a break, take a walk, you know, go for a drive, whatever you need to do, don't walk in that front door angry ever. Because the problem is, again, going back to the pet book, we all know there's a thing called intermittent versus predictable reinforcement. The reason why fishing is so addicting because it's intermittent reinforcement. You don't know when the next fish is going to bite. If you go to a trout farm and just put the fishing pole in and pull a fish out every time, people don't particularly enjoy that. So it goes the other way also, is if 9 times out of 10, you're in a good mood, come home, and 1 time out of 10, you're in a bad mood, you're screwed. They don't know which person's coming through that door. It's huge. So and then when he points out in the parenting book, which it wasn't that hard to do, by the way, he says you can't use this as a management technique. It's a way of life. So you can't use it 90% of the time, and then 10% of the time pull out the hammer and just bash a kid over the head. You get to the point you just never have to use authority, and you never should. Yeah. You can negotiate, you can talk, you can listen, but you never go to an authority mode because, again, intermittent reinforcement is just completely deadly.
Yeah.
But going forward, here's the deal. Okay, so we did workshops, and this is a little bit like a family. We did a bunch of workshops at Omega Institute in New York, one in Seattle, and it was a 3-day and 5-day workshops. It was based on structure, didactic. People shared in small groups and in large groups. Then my wife is a tap dancer, and she brought in an exercise called the Cup Song. Have you heard of the Cup Song?
I have not.
Oh my God, look it up on the internet. It's called the Cup Song. And it's, God, what's the name of the movie? Anyway, it's a cup song. Yes. It's a rhythm. Okay. She's a tap dancer. We're not going to tap dance. But anyway, people were embarrassed, but they were vulnerable. They started laughing. And within probably a half a day after they started to laugh, their pain literally disappeared. And we couldn't figure out why. Well, what happens when you're at play and laughing is a massive, profound shift in your body's chemistry. So in 3 to 5 days, 80% of people went to pain-free in the workshop. Now, when they went home to the triggers, it came back. But no, they had tools. They had strategies. And so 5, 10, 15 years later, they're still thriving, still doing well. So their brain tasted what was possible. So it's my personal commitment is that I want to be aware of what I say, what I do, my impact on other people, which is hard and humbling, by the way. But again, going back to my work situation, just take an idea of actually we're going to enjoy our work, period. Nobody's going to take that away from us. And our fellows came in from these neurosurgical and orthopedic fellows, residency programs pretty beat up. Surgery is a tough field. Our mentors are very critical. And we felt like for the first 6 months of the fellowship that we're like a rescue shelter. And we're like, you know, it's like a feral cat. And so they would calm down. And by the end of the year, we're all having just the best time. Our complication rate dropped. Patient satisfaction went up. All sorts of things happen. And you can do the same thing in your own family. Just make a conscious choice every day to have a good time.
Yeah, I love the whole thing of not giving your children commands. And a lot of people are like, what are you talking about? You have to tell them to clean their room. You have to do all this. And I'm like, no, you don't. I mean, when I don't tell them what to do, they do anything and everything. Yeah. And I love, so my husband and I like to go for a walk at nighttime. We don't do it as much lately for some reason, which this is a reminder that we should walk at nighttime. But what I love is my kids love like the Hamilton play, for instance, or, you know, all these other musicals, and they'll put on music. So all of them, doesn't matter what age they are, really loud in the house, they'll all sing it and they'll clean up. And it is, they have the, we come home and they're laughing and they're doing the chore that, how do you get all your children to clean up after dinner, the whole entire house? You put on music, you give them something fun to do.
Right.
And they have the best time together as siblings, which again, people like, you have a 9-year-old and a 24-year-old, how do they get along? Because they do stuff like this together. They learned that things like that can be fun. Mom doesn't have to like say, here's what you have to do. You know, like, you know, girls, I'm going to go for a walk with dad. Do you guys want to put on that music again and straighten up the house? They're like, yeah, mom, sure. So it becomes something fun for them and something fun for them to kind of come together, you know, and bond, because we forget that too, is siblings don't have the opportunity to bond because we're always giving them activities outside the house and things to do and chores to do separately. And you know what I mean? It's very structured, and not that structure is wrong, but it, if it's in a fun way, the kids want to do it. So just encourage all of you.
Again, when you're at play, there's a really an unspeakably profound shift in your body's chemistry.
Yeah.
Oxytocin, a bonding drug, dopamine, yeah. Relaxation drug, reward drug, serotonin, antidepressant drug. These are all incredible chemicals that are in your body, having way more powerful effect than medications can.
Yeah.
And you think more clearly, your creativity comes back.
Mm-hmm.
We have a little saying, no action in a reaction. So if you're angry or frustrated, don't say anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So just as a bit of a finishing up here, there's lots of things to cover, but the doc journey will give you a structure. On my website, backincontrol.com, I'll just say this here because it's not on my doc journey site yet, I have a huge section on the family components around pain. And so again, people with chronic pain complain a lot. And one of the Carter rules about chronic pain in general, mental or physical, is never complain.
Yeah.
No giving advice, no criticism, no complaining, no discussing medical care. But think about this. How many people really like being told what to do? I mean, your kids don't, particularly you don't. If they're telling you what to do, how would you react? So why do we think our kids deserve to have them to be told what to do all the time?
What's your advice with the children about complaining and teaching them how not to complain? And even those reoccurring unpleasant thoughts, what's your advice to, as parents, helping our children with that?
So again, there's no simplistic solutions, but they're not hard. So again, the Doc Journey course takes you through a sequence. Remember, humans cannot tolerate emotional pain. So what do you do? So there's a series of steps that allows you to open the door a crack, open it more and more and more, allow yourself to tolerate emotional pain, and then allows you to become more and more aware. Then you learn how to process anger, which is a huge deal. Every person that truly heals learns anger. Mm-hmm. And forgiveness is too big of a, forgiveness doesn't work. It's too big of a word. So people get irritated every day.
Mm-hmm.
So forgiveness isn't the answer, even though it's not a bad answer. It's just that we call it flipping the switch. Anger is a very powerful survival reaction. So just as one example of a strategy to deal with anger is the first five words is no action in a reaction. Mm-hmm. When you're in a reaction, you're in the past, you're not in the present. So clench your teeth, walk out of the room, just don't engage when you're angry, period.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing, the second three words, you call it 5-3-2. The second three words is called flipping the switch. Okay, you're in a victim role, you're upset, you're pissed off. And so it doesn't matter what conversation you have, it's not going to solve it. So it's very powerful. There's no shortcuts. It's never going to go away, by the way. So we call it flipping the switch. You simply decide to change directions.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to go a different direction. So the final two words is move on. So no action and reaction. Calm down. Then you decide to flip the switch. You flip the switch. And then you move on.
Mm-hmm.
It's in, for as simple and simplistic as it sounds, it's incredibly effective.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're, I mean, triggers are, and families, by the way, are the deepest triggers. Mm-hmm. That's how you're programmed. That's what sets you off again. So the family rules around anger is that we wish everybody that can read and participate learn the tools. And the tools are around self-regulation. For instance, there's breath work, there's music, there's rubbing your forehead, stimulate the vagus nerve, which is anti-inflammatory. Positive play, again, a profound shift in body chemistry. When you, and the other thing that happened when I was a parent, in, when my son was at home, where about 13, 14 years old, there'd be times where things were not great between us. I'd pick up this book, PET, and find out what was going on, and it was always me.
Mm-hmm.
It was always me. Because what happens, again, going back to David Byrne's stuff about feeling good together, is that if your kid or spouse or partner acts in a way that you don't like, you're the one that started the reaction. Mm-hmm. So what happened to me and my son during those years is I would start getting asking too many intrusive questions. And so there's a chapter in PET book, chapter 3, there's 14 different things that parents do to their kids that are intrusive. Too much about their day, what's going on, little details here and there. So you're acting like you're trying to be a concerned parent, but you're really trying to control them.
Mm-hmm.
None of us like to be controlled, especially your kids.
Wow.
And so I wish I could find this really quickly in the book, but you know, he calls about the parents' bill of rights, about, you know, parents say that they have to, you know, teach your kids wisdom, et cetera. And he says, how dare you think that you're smarter than your kids? You don't know
that.
You've had more experiences and maybe you're not as smart.
Right.
We call it the parents' bill of rights. And it's really a profound statement.
Mm-hmm.
So you just get to learn with your kids. You get to listen from your kids. You get to learn from them. And it just makes the whole experience a lot more fun. So as you have more fun, they have more fun. They have more fun, you have more fun. So it's a very much of a exponential growth process. And I love the story about your kids doing what they have to do without arguing with them. They'll just do it.
And I have to add, too, a lot of people say, Julia, how do you do it? How are you so patient with the kids? This is how I do it. And it's in the book. And it's very simple, but it is a lot to do with you. And a lot of people are just trying to get patience. And they walk into the room like, oh, I'm going to be patient. I'm going to be patient. And then they just explode. And it's yeah.
Dr. David, before I let you go, before we stop the podcast, this is an important question that is on my heart. And this is what we've been struggling with over the last 3-4 years about the triggering, about somebody gets elected in office and we can't have a conversation and it's their fault, our fault. Because this is really important for young adults and for people trying to have conversations, because the conversations aren't being had anymore because we're blaming it, because it's a stimulus and response. I listen and believe Dr. Stephen Covey when he talks about that. I can get stimulated, but what's my response? What do you say to somebody? How do you correct that when someone's saying something against what you believe? And like you said, you get triggered, and it's through families. I want to get families back together, being able to discuss things that are uncomfortable, that I don't believe the person that you voted for. I can't believe, but let's at least have the conversation. And you're triggering me because you're wearing a hat, and that hat. So how do we have that conversation? How can I, you know, have that conversation? What's the solution to that?
You are not going to like my answer at all.
I don't like my wife's answers either, so it's okay.
Okay. So a trigger is a trigger. If you're triggered, they're triggered. Remember, when you're triggered, your thinking brain is offline.
Uh-huh.
So that's why people say don't talk politics, don't talk religion, because it's just like two zombies talking to each other. And by the way, how do you know your belief system is more correct than their belief system? Because they think the same way, right? So it's actually arrogant to think your belief system is a better belief system than theirs.
100%.
Once you believe yours is the right system, then you actually can't learn anymore. So with my spine fellows, if I thought I was the mentor and couldn't learn anything, I learned a tremendous amount of my skill sets from my fellows because I just wanted to listen.
Mm-hmm.
So the number one thing we talk, I mean, this is crosses all aspects of self-care. We say, look, never discuss your pain, mental or physical. Don't discuss your medical care. Don't talk politics. No complaining, period. No giving unasked for advice, no criticism, no gossiping, because all it does is for your physiology. And so it's one of those things where when you get upset about things you have no control over, in other words, you're in a victim role.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why people do that, because it allows them to stay in the victim role. Remember, the genealogy of anger is circumstance, blame, victim, anger. So if you get about something that's a world event or world situation that you have no control over, what you really are doing is actually choosing to stay in the victim role. And it's powerful. You're powerful, you're right, all these types of things, and it's addicting.
Mm-hmm.
I did like your answer, though. I do like your answer.
Your life will change dramatically. And I get back into this a little bit. So I really urge people to limit their time watching the news, if at all, maybe 15 to 30 minutes a day, just know what's going on. I get a little bit into the iPhone where the headlines keep popping up and keep looking at them and reading. It's bad stuff.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help my day. So our responsibility as human beings is to enjoy our lives and be a source of energy and positivity to people close to us. And there's a little book out that I quote this all the time. It's called 365 Tao. It's an old book. I got to get this used. And there's a little metaphor in here about a heron that stands on one leg in a pond. And when a fish swims by, it just reaches down, grabs lunch, and has lunch and still stands there. Let me just read this to you. Can I read this for a second?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Heron stands in the blue estuary, solitary, white, unmoving for hours, a fish. Quick avian darting, the prey captured. So the secret is of staying alert, still, don't waste your energy. As people say, keep your powder dry. But the bottom line is that when life presents an opportunity, we must be ready to seize it without hesitation or inhibition, but you're only responsible for what's in your sphere of influence. That's mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. So one of my more successful mentors, who I actually got mentored by today, very successful businessman, pointed out the only thing you're responsible for is yourself. You have to take care of yourself. Then your family, then your friends, then your colleagues, then society. But if you don't take care of yourself, nothing else matters. Mm-hmm. So if you're not arguing, you know, religion, politics, baseball, or sports, you don't really know who that person is. Yeah. And so it just drains you out of energy that you need to actually to take care of your family. Mm-hmm. So you'll find out, you just take that, again, a major cardinal rule, first leg of the doc journey, is no discussing medical care, no discussing your pain, no complaining, no gossiping, no giving advice, no criticism, nothing. Just comes off the table completely. Mm-hmm. And until people do that, they actually cannot really heal.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Remember,
there's input, the nervous system, and the output.
Yeah.
And so you're changing the input, which lowers your physiology in from threat to safety.
Yeah, I think the gossip and the complaining and the not giving advice, if you're not, that, especially as a woman, as a mom, is torturous for a little while. Right. But I promise you, it's very freeing at one point. And it's very calming. And all of a sudden, you're like, why am I so calm sitting in the room of kids being loud and doing things that normally would bother me. And it's very interesting what happens. And it just takes you to try it one time. Just try it one time, walk into a room and just sit and watch, pay attention to your kids, notice their reaction that you're just sitting there because maybe you're not normally doing that. It's very interesting to start observing other people instead of just like we were talking about before, telling them, here's what you have to do next, or, you know, complaining about something wasn't done properly, the dishwasher wasn't loaded properly. All of that is one of those things you just let it go. And when you start, you know, you teach your kids as much as you can. And then at one point you said, let it go and let them figure it out and do it in their own way, because it's not all about us all the time.
Dr. David,
it sounds like you've jumped into some of these principles yourself fairly hard. I'm impressed.
Thank you. Like I said, I did it accidentally and now yeah. I have the book. So what good is that for me? And now it's good that I can give it to other people, I guess.
You have a structure to think about this on. So no, I mean, yeah. A lot of it's common sense. What I didn't realize earlier on is that the profound effect it has on your body's chemistry.
Yes.
So if you change the game mm-hmm. about what can I do to, well, first of all, I have to renew this once in a while. I just refuse to give my peace of mind over somebody who irritates me.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. they're not being nice. They're jerks. Why do I want my peace of mind destroyed yes. by somebody who's being a jerk?
Exactly.
I don't need to do that. So I just say, not going to do that.
Yeah.
I don't have to react. I want to spend time with them.
Right.
But on the other hand, what can I do to make my life around me more enjoyable?
Mm.
So it's two sides of the equation. I become aware of my impact on others and others' impact on me. Mm-hmm. Then going back to this book, again, The Way to Love by DeMello, he defines love as awareness, awareness, awareness.
Mm, so true.
Just become aware. So yeah, it changes the game dramatically. Plus, by the way, it's much more interesting to listen than mm-hmm. it is projecting your view of the world on everybody else. I mean, you already know your view.
Yeah.
It's rather tiring. And then if somebody, by the way, Gino, somebody triggers you,
yeah,
is telling you something.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that triggered. So again, in this book, The Way to Love, he points out that the chapter called Love Your Enemies, if somebody upsets you, you learn to thank them.
Mm.
Because it tells you what's actually in your own brain.
Right. I'd be thanking my wife every 5 minutes then, huh?
I just have good ideas. I love that because it's you can get to a point where someone disagrees. It could be politics, religion, whatever it is. And you can learn just to listen to their part. Yeah. And there are a lot of things that you don't agree with. And you can wonder or ask, How did you learn about that? What exactly got you to that point? And you can learn so much. And that's when you don't get triggered or angry, because you want to know about the person, not so much about their idea, but about how they got there. And so that becomes interesting at one point. And so you're not angry, you're just curious.
I just saw a movie called Living with Bill Nighy in it. Have you seen this movie?
No, I have not.
It's profound. It's really good. It's about 6 months old, maybe. Bill Nighy is that English actor. He's a pretty funny guy. Mm-hmm. And just one line in there. I'll just tell you the line. I won't tell you the context, because it's really a movie worth looking at. But he made a comment, is that I don't have time to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And a little something before we sign off, ladies. This really works with your husbands, just so you know. If you don't complain, if you don't give advice, all of those things that Dr. David said, it really, I mean, it will change your marriage. For real. Like, I'm not kidding. I'm laughing, but I'm serious.
Dr. David, listen, it's been an honor. It really been a privilege to talk to you. We could talk hours about this, because for us, there's so much we don't know about being good parents, and there's so much that we need to learn. And for somebody that's been retired since 2019, I think you've made such a profound impact in these last few years of the work that you're doing and the work that you're putting in. And for me to be able to know somebody that continues to want to grow and learn and give back, because these are all things that you're doing that you don't have to do anymore, but you're able to do that. It means a lot that you come on the show and you share these thoughts and you share all the knowledge that you've learned. So just once again, thanks again for being on the show. And it's backincontrol.com. And for everybody out there, do the work. Mm-hmm. You are worth it. It's harder not to do the work. Mm-hmm. So if you do the work now, you will be happy for the rest of your life.
So, on the backincontrol.com website, a couple things. We talked about the resources page, which gives the access to the app and the course, which is the sequence to follow. But if you look on, it's called Stage 3, Step 2, is a whole section on the family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's essentially another mini book about the family, this family structure around pain. And chronic pain, mental, physical, just devastates families. It's the biggest, the last years of my practice was spent almost exclusively on family issues. Mm-hmm. So it's on there on the backincontrol.com website. It's not on the Doc Journey, but there's a lot of stuff on that one section of Back in Control.
Love it. And I know there's someone out there listening. This can help your family. This can impact your life. And I'm sure you know many people that this can also help. Please share this podcast with those people, because I just want everyone to hear this. I want everyone to learn this, because their life will change dramatically, I promise.
And their
it's 100% worth it. Your families will change and it will spread. So
thanks again, Dr. David.